everyone. Welcome to today's IT Showcase webinar, where we will be discussing shifting responsibilities in Exchange Service Management after migration to Microsoft Exchange Online. My name is Kim Lukoski, and I'm a Senior Program Manager in Microsoft IT around the productivity conversation, and I'll be your host. Today, we have with us Andrew Kim, who's one of our IT subject matter experts. Before I ask Andrew to introduce himself, I want to remind you that you can use the Skype Q&A window to ask us questions at any time. Also, please use Bing Pulse at the bottom of your window to tell us a little bit about you. This will help us focus our discussion today. Okay, so let's get started. Andrew, take a moment, introduce yourself.
Sure.
And we'll dive in.
Yeah. So again, my name is Andrew Kim. I've been at Microsoft for 8 years, 3 years as a contractor and 5 years as a full-time employee. I've been in various roles in Exchange operations, and also Active Directory operations, as well as service engineering. And now I'm in my current role here in Microsoft IT as the service manager for the Exchange email and calendaring service, and enjoying that, surviving, as many of our IT brethren know. We'll just dive into this. So just the agenda for everyone to know, this is what I'll be covering today is basically on how you shift your mindset from your on-premise service that you controlled over to Office of Exchange Online, and some examples that we ran through here in Microsoft IT, and just some things to consider end-to-end experiences going forward, concentrating around the client experience for the users, looking at how you're managing all the sweet new features in Office 365 and how you can provide those capabilities to your users at your company and whether you want those or not and how to manage them. Having the right team to do that, because you need that right team, as someone from Seattle, the Seahawks, so that team mindset to make everything successful. And also just an example on how we use sort of Scrum and Agile processes here on the team. We use Visual Studio Online to manage a lot of our projects, using some new metrics and developing maybe some reporting and tools that may help you consider to help with your services, and then some of the benefits that we saw from doing all that. And just a little disclaimer, like these are sort of best practices and just things to consider. You don't have to do these to be successful because all companies and users are different. So these are just some ideas and stuff that we just want to share that you can consider including in your service or not. But yeah.
Great.
So just getting into it, so shifting and controlling responsibilities. So obviously before you moved to Office Exchange Online, you probably had a whole bunch of servers you had to manage. You had to, apply patches to them, manage the operations, replace hard drives and all that kind of stuff, keeping the availability high. And when we say, 99.9% uptime, that usually means users' access to Outlook Web App or OWA, which we know a lot of users use other clients outside of that. And also, you have to do a lot of capacity planning, making sure your end-of-life servers are replaced, you have enough servers, and whatever you're using for load balancing and all that kind of stuff, you have to manage all that. And while your time is spent on sort of the back-end server maintenance and operations. But after you move to Office 365, you're basically paying Microsoft to do that all for you. They're going to manage all the operations, all the upgrades, and those kind of things, cert upgrades and stuff like that. And so you don't have to apply patches anymore. So you really have to shift your focus from this back-end service of servers to more of an end-to-end shift of your services with sort of a focus on user satisfaction. Because overall, you're not maintaining these servers anymore, so you really need to know and ensure a great user experience for the people that are using your services, because who cares about 99% sort of server availability if no one can access it, right? You don't know if they access it or if they're having a good experience or if they're able to email or not. It doesn't really matter if you have a 99% uptime. You're going to care about what that user experience is and sort of evolve around that. And just something to consider with that, I kept saying, end-to-end and stuff. So this is just an example of what an end-to-end experience is. So you have to consider a lot of different dimensions before you sort of had a smaller scope of just of servers, but you have to keep in mind you have users, you have businesses, you might have product groups that have specific needs of your service, and then a lot of those people have, you know, systematic or programs running to access email on servers and things like that. You have different protocols. I'll go a little bit more deeper in the next slide, but you know, you got Outlook Desktop, you got OWA, you got the many Exchange ActiveSync or REST clients and different ways they can access that, as well as EWS. There's a lot of, you know, programmatic scenarios there, as well as what's the device the person is accessing, or the business. So there's the personal computers, tablets, mobile devices. There's collaboration devices like a round table in a room that can have some mailbox access, as well as a server. And in between that, it actually has to connect to the internet. Office 365 is an internet service, so it's connecting whether through your you know, corporate network, your wireless carrier on your devices, whether you have hotspots and things like that, as well as the user's, you know, home internet service provider. You got to make sure they can access it through there very well, meaning your app, whatever you have set up. And then you have the many different kind of platforms, whether you're in a hybrid with Exchange on-premises and Office Exchange Online. There's different identity platforms, you know, Azure Active Directory, Active Directory, different syncs between those, make sure everything's in sync. You may be using AEFS or Active Directory Federation Services, which can enable multi-factor auth. And then you may have some kind of mobile device management software. Since this is a Microsoft talk, I'm going to talk about, I'm going to say Intune, but there's obviously other competitors in that game as well. So there's this huge end-to-end experience you just have
to. A lot of complexity.
Yeah, a lot of complexity. So you're just focusing off of that servers. And now you're focusing on all of what you see in this slide.
So what are some specifics of things that you have to consider to understand the end-to-end experience?
Like? Yeah, so one main thing is sort of, some people may not like this, but sort of profile your users and your user base. So when you start looking at the metrics and what they use and how they use it, you can start putting certain groups into buckets, and you can sort of elevate the experience for them. So you're learning how they actually use it. So you can deep dive into, like, okay, why are they escalating so many help desk tickets, and deep dive into that. And one is, you know, a lot of our sales folks in different subsidiaries, I mean, they're not in a well-connected Microsoft Office. I mean, they're often traveling, they're on the road, so they might be accessing email while on a high-speed train and connected to wireless carrier there. I mean, that's something a lot of people don't consider. A lot of people just consider what's in the office. So that's one, you know, remote scenario there that we have to look into. So if someone is on, like, their computer accessing email, Outlook Desktop, in that kind of scenario, it's not going to work very well. So a lot of it is, like, user education. It's like, hey, you know, try to use Outlook in cache mode. You want to disable all these add-ins and things like that. So a lot of the simpler stuff you can do for these users is just build them a guide. Another example is, like, business administrators. A lot of them don't really use all the features in email, but they use a lot of calendaring stuff. So sort of focusing on that experience and letting them know how they can, you know, enable delegation for, you know, different people, and managing those mailbox permissions, as well as how to, you know, manage your calendar better. How do you check free busy? Because, you know, people use email in different ways. So sometimes you try to say, hey, here's a very easy way to check free busy. You know, you can pop them up in the gal, put them in there, and you can see all their free busy and see their meetings and stuff like that.
So you're creating kind of a persona for each business type
role.
And you cover these different areas. Is there anything on here that that's not on here that you would think about? You mentioned, is it pretty much the client, the device?
Yeah, I mean, there's something I don't include in here because it's sort of a different dimension, but it is, like, what part of the service they're using. So whether it's the email part or the calendaring part. So that's what I don't really have in here.
Okay.
But maybe I should update that
later. No, that's just good. It's very good interesting. Great, right, great tip.
Thanks. Yeah, and we talked a lot about the client. So here you can see there's different ways you can access email. There's Exchange Web Services, MAPI RPC, Exchange ActiveSync, and then the web write. So these are just things that, instead of server mindset, I mean, you really want to concentrate on the clients, because that's how people are accessing email. And that even goes deeper, like, some of these clients do have a very, you know, strong interop with other software, like Windows. Like Outlook Desktop has a very strong relationship with Windows. So there's stuff you have to keep learning and evolve that, you know, you're just not an email person anymore. You're going to have to be a networking person. You're going to have to be an identity person. You're going to have to be these client, mindsets and stuff like that. So just things to consider. And then there are sort of Office 365 comes with a lot of features. So that's one of the main selling points is you're not having to, you know, deploy these vast, you know, deployments of newer versions of Exchange so you can live these features. I mean, you're going to get them as they go because they're developing, you know, every week new features are coming out. Like there's like an events feature where they'll automatically add, like if you get an airline flight and you and it sends you the tickets and stuff, it automatically adds that to your calendar. Do you want your users to have that or not? That's up to you, but you know, some people don't like stuff turned on for them. Some people love it, so they don't have to do anything. So you just have to be aware of all the different kind of changes. And I believe, so I don't know from an external customer perspective, but I think they should be receiving either a newsletter or through the admin portal, what are the new features coming up? So you should be able, you should really pay attention to that. Because there might be something you don't want, or there's something really cool you want, and you want your users to start using it, so you can have, you know, better productivity and collaboration within your business. So those are things you need to look into.
Is there a methodology that you use to make those decisions? Or?
Yeah. So we there are features that we get no matter what, right?
Right.
Like you're gonna get 50 gigabyte quota and stuff like that. But how we sort of deploy, we basically separate into phases, and we have four major phases that we always do things in. So the first one's what we call the POC or the proof of concept, and that's where we do a lot of validation. We have a huge sort of validation matrix because some of these things work across different Office 365 services like Skype for Business or SharePoint. So we just want to make sure everything works well. We also do get these features earlier than people because we are internal Microsoft, so we gotta make sure there's not a lot too many bugs before we let people see these things. And the next phase is obviously the pilot. So in the POC, that gives us like, hey, this is good or not, and good, we move on to a smaller pilot where we start getting people outside of our team involved so they start using it. When that passes, we get into what's called initial volume. So this is basically production, but we're trying to limit as much because we're still not 100% comfortable with it, and then eventually moves to a production stage where run state, everyone gets it. Do a lot, and what that entails is a lot of what you see in the slide, sort of skipping down, is documentation. So when you are doing these, you want to document how these features work, what were the bugs that we found, how are people using it, and we feed that to support because they're the front line for our service, right? So we get them better prepared, update their knowledge base articles on how to opt out of people or how to tell people how to use it better. Like we provide a lot of that. And then, you know, getting into it, we do want to control which features are enabled that you do have control over. So there are things like the Office add-ins, which used to be called Mail Apps. Like, do you want certain ones enabled for your entire organization? Do you not want to have that? Not want users to install anything from the store? Like there's clutter and things of that nature. Like, do you want these features or not? So you have to make those decisions. And also, the ones you do get, you do may have to work around them. So there are certain throttling limits in the service. So you can right now, you can only send, you know, each mailbox sends about 10,000 emails per 24-hour period. You know, that's to mitigate a lot of the spam and different kind of things like that. But there are scenarios where your business wants to send more. So sort of documenting how they can work around that. And that is using more than one mailbox, honestly. And then I talked about it a little earlier, so before you enable them, you do sort of want to validate them and see if there's any performance concerns because you do have a network, right? So you want to make sure it works on your network and get your sign off if your network teams are separate. Is there an identity component? Get that signed off. Is there a security component to this? So you want to work with the security team to say, hey, is there anything going on? And one big new one, obviously, is privacy. So a lot of people are very... These are internet services, so they do grab info and things like that. And both privacy and legal, you may have to get involved if you want to deploy certain things in different countries. A lot of countries have different data laws and stuff like that. What needs to stay within their country, or what can be, you know, free flowing, and what does data mean? Like, what kind of data? So there are things you have to consider in sort of your sort of methodology when you go to Office 365 and deploy. So get a lot of stuff, but you have to also do a little bit of planning and make sure you know, you cross your T's and stuff like that. But hopefully I'm not scaring anyone. I mean,
it sounds complex.
It sounds a little complex, but I mean, it's all part of the job of, you know, service management.
Yep.
Yeah. And then part of that, you do need to have the right team to help, you know, maintain that complexity that I just mentioned earlier. So you may or may not have someone called a service manager. I mean, there's different names for it. And basically in sort of industry IT, service manager is basically a big change management person, but mm-hmm. this person should also keep in mind, I mean, their main goal and my main goal is user satisfaction. That's how, you know, I keep my job or get my bonuses around the user's end-to-end user experience and make sure people are happy. So once you have someone in a role that their whole prerogative is user sat, I mean, it makes everything better for everyone, as well as, you know, cutting down costs and those kind of things that go with it. But yeah. I mean, you need someone, if your company really embraces that and wants your people to use your services very well, service manager is probably a key component to that, because their job is 100% user satisfaction and driving whatever it needs to get to that level.
Helping your users to be productive.
Yeah.
How's Microsoft IT set up?
Yeah, so right now, this disclaimer, we do get a lot of help from the Exchange Product Group. They're our close partners, and they do fill in like a lot of roles. If I was like the service manager on your team, but we currently have about four full-time employees on the team. There's one service manager, that's myself. We have two service engineer. One plays sort of the architect role that understands the end-to-end and has a very good understanding of, you know, the identity platforms and things like that. And his name's Shad. And then we have another, I think he's in other videos and these roundtables, so you probably have seen him around. Another person is Travis, who's a service engineer as well. He manages a lot of our deployments, gets our reporting and that kind of stuff. As well as, well, our last person is our program manager, Sharif. So he partners with me to drive a lot of these larger features. So when we have to migrate to maybe a different platform, because we use every single Exchange platform in Microsoft, that he helps manage that. Sort of like security programs, something major like that. He'll sort of drive those. And one thing we stress is everyone on our team is based on engineering. So they do need to be able to read like a feature spec and give really good, meaningful feedback back to the product group. That's their basis. And then everyone sort of has their niche, like mine's the user sat with service management, the end-to-end, and then Shad has his architect, Travis has his sort of run state and operations, and Treat has his programs, but we all help one another when we fill in because we have that engineering background. So even though we have sort of these focuses, we make sure to fill in those gaps with one another.
And you are responsible globally,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
It's not just the U.S.
Yeah.
It's global. It's interesting. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, and getting back to it, like I mentioned, that architect role, so that's really key because how Office 365 is moving, there's a lot more tightly knit services now. So like whenever, like groups is between Exchange and SharePoint, and then there's going to be more stuff between Skype for Business, and there comes Delve, which, you know, spurs a lot of stuff. So you need someone that understands the sort of more in-depth engineering across all these different services. Because for me, like, I'm more of the Exchange email side, but then I'm a little weaker in some of the other ones. And then we have Shad that covers all that, and he's a very smart guy. So, well, I guess his ego's growing now.
He is a smart guy, though.
This is live, too. I can't edit that out.
He's going to point that out.
Travis is smart, too. Yeah. And so there's that. And then you're going to have those program managers, project managers. I want to lean towards more of the technical side. So they need to really drive that on their own, because the more they understand the technical side, they'll be like, hey, red button, this is a bad idea, you know, because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. We had our own migration team. So this is more for when you're actually starting your move. So you have, you know, 100% on-premises and you're going to online. Like, it's good to have a dedicated team that just executes the migrations. Because there's a lot that goes into that. I did have a different video and different paper on that, and we'll link those later, I guess. But I mean, there's a lot of complexity because, you know, you have to manage sort of the delegate relationships and check AD on that side for public delegates, and you have to get the mailbox folder permissions on the Exchange side. Like someone has to do that and execute that and manage the moves. You can probably buy different tools and stuff, but here we use our internal tools. And although we have some automation to migrate these large batches, I mean, some of them fail and someone has to look into that, or there's some special case where, you know, we're moving this specific team at this specific time, so someone has to manage that. So it's good to have a SME in that area, because you'll get weird transient errors and stuff like that during migrations. And most of the time, if you just restart it once, it's fine, but sometimes it doesn't because everyone has different content in their email and you're migrating gigs of stuff over, you know, cross ocean data centers and stuff like that. So a lot of things can go wrong, as well as copying the email in. So you just have to watch for that. Service engineering, so that's sort of Travis's role. And so it's managing those kind of like feature sets and cleaning up stuff. Like we always have to clean up our transport roles and our, you know, allow lists and stuff like that. We do have a communication specialist. So when we make these changes, it's really good to inform users. So this person, you know, helps update our knowledge base articles, our sort of service sites, as well as all our email cadences. Those things keep changing. And we're still in a state of migrations, like we migrate to different platforms and stuff. So it's good to have that person that concentrates on that, making sure the user's aware, because we actually do send different communications to those personas I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So someone in sales may get a different kind of migration communications than someone in engineering, and depending on their role in organization, they'll get little different verbiage and stuff like that.
So, nice.
And we have so many features, new features coming out, that we just need that person to help manage that and either market it or word it better than an engineering person. So yeah, and then we have a tools developer. I mean, there's a lot of custom stuff that I want. So this is more specifically for managing Microsoft here. So if you're somewhere else in a different company, I mean, this person is to develop stuff specifically for your business to help it run better. Because obviously Microsoft can't cater to every single person. I mean, it's hard to get general. So this person developed a lot of tools that I needed to make a better user experience and reporting that I needed so I can make better decisions and things like that.
Great.
Yeah, moving on, just a small little example on how we work. We do 2-week sprints. Basically, we try to do our planning earlier in the quarter, but with Agile things change. So basically every 2 weeks we can shift where we're moving and what kind of projects we're focusing on. And a lot of the projects are like service improvement projects, deployment projects, cleanup projects and things like that, optimizing our services. And you know, we still have some on-premise footprint here at Microsoft, so decommissioning that and things of that nature. So that's how we sort of work. We have a very large backlog, but obviously because we work in a 2-week sprint, we try to get that down and just focus on the right things through our metrics. So this is the small sample. Yeah. And then I mentioned metrics. So we do use a couple of new ones, because I know when you're in your on-premises days, you're trying to, you know, always optimize your SCOM alerts and things like that. But in an online world, you don't really need SCOM as much. Unless you keep a very large on-premises when you're in hybrid. But for us, we did develop some synthetics in Azure. So there are C# scripts that measure a lot of performance metrics from Exchange Web Services. So grabbing free busy, checking the gal, things like that. We sort of measure that. But the thing is, the example I like to give is it should just be used as sort of a smaller baseline and understand what's really occurring with the service. But it's sort of like running on a treadmill at the gym versus running outside. Then the treadmill is a very controlled environment, so you're gonna, you know, perform at your optimal pace because it's the same thing. It's probably air conditioned. You have your water right there, probably watching TV, stuff like that. But when you're outside, you know, the weather changes, there's different roads and stuff like that. So just keep that sort of, I don't know if that's a very good,
it's a good
example,
anomaly.
But that's sort of how those synthetics really work. So I wouldn't stress too much, but it was a good point for us to understand what's really happening. And we actually had these both in Azure and in our on-premises data centers just to see the difference. And they're pretty much the same, but it's sort of good, it's cool to see. And then a lot of our metrics are around the Outlook experience. So of course for Microsoft, so I'm gonna say like the first party apps. There are other third parties and stuff like that, but we really look into that. And one example is we do look at how people are using Outlook, the usage percentage between, you know, Outlook desktop, Exchange ActiveSync, OWA, and stuff like that. We break it down between regions and stuff like that. So it's really cool to see here at Microsoft, like in North America, like 80% of the time people are using Outlook desktop. But if we go to Europe, A lot of them are actually using Exchange Accessing, so it's pretty interesting to see. So we have to sort of focus on different things in different regions. And then we really stressed help desk metrics. This is our main metrics when we first moved back, you know, 6-7 years ago to Office 365. Basically, only really help metrics we really had. And they're really great indicators because they help sort of focus on what's going on with the users. Again, we're trying to better the user experience, so you're sort of what best to look at what people are escalating, right?
What's an example?
Like, yeah, so
something that was a help desk,
yeah,
that drove the experience, a change in the experience, or
yeah. So since it's live, I don't know if I can name specific companies, but there was a very, so actually, let me go back a bit. So we're seeing sort of an uptick in tickets for Exchange Accessing that it wasn't working. They weren't able to access email. And we're sort of correlating that to what changes happened in the service. So we looked at our change log and we noticed, oh, okay, the service did make a major change shifting from an IPv4 enabled namespace to IPv6. Like, okay, around that time that happened, but you know, I'm working fine in our testing. But we found within our own team and what we were seeing in the tickets too, a lot of them had the same wireless carrier. This very large wireless carrier in in North America. People were having issues accessing Office 365 on that using Exchange Accessing. And that's how we correlated and we worked with that large carrier to understand why the IPv6 enabled namespace wasn't working well on networks. In that meantime, we worked with the product group. They gave us an IPv4 enabled namespace. This as a workaround as we were working this out with the user, so we had to update all their comms. You know, we had that comms person do it, saying, hey, use this namespace instead of this one. So that's one example of how we found a big issue and sort of mitigated early on by tracking the help desk escalations. And with that is the quality metrics. So with our quality metrics, this is basically our gateways. When we migrate batches, we would stop at some point if it didn't meet our quality bar. Now it's mostly around help desk escalations within the first 24 and 48 hours after a migration. We would stop it at about 10% if it ever went past 10%, because if, you know, 10 out of 100 people are complaining about something, there's probably more people outside of that just didn't want to call help desk. So that was our sort of sweet spot there. So that's something you should consider as a gateway.
And just to help our audience understand our global scale, about how many users do we have on our?
Yeah, we have about 220,000 user mailboxes.
Okay.
Split between, you know, full-time employees and our various vendors and contingent staff that get mailboxes.
Great.
From corporate. Yeah. Yeah, and then getting into sort of the tool set. So we actually built our own troubleshooting tools from looking at those help desk metrics. There is actually a new one called SARA. I forgot what the acronym stands for. It's like recovery assistant. That's actually built into Office 365 now, but we had our own tools where it, you know, reset profiles if people had issues with Outlook, because that's what we were finding, that some people migrating over had some issues with their profiles, so we made it just easier for them. Since we're sending out so many communications and stuff on their migrations, we built sort of an internal tool that sort of not only sends a whole bunch of emails, but it sort of manages who it went to and stuff, because we were getting escalations, hey, I didn't get an email and so we're trying to track, make sure people got emails and stuff that we can go back into a look. Since we have so many sort of services here at Microsoft, our team built a page called My Setup, which shows a user what service they're in and what OWA and Exchange Accessing URL they should use and a bunch of other stuff. There's some Skype for Business information there as well, but that was sort of like an internal web API that grabbed a lot of information on the user that the user can easily see. And then we have a lot of different service reporting. You know, when you go to Office 365, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can get now that we didn't have a long time ago that you can grab from the API, or enabling mailbox auditing and that kind of stuff. Right now we mostly use SQL reporting right now, SSRS reporting, and some of it is in Power BI as well. So we have a little mix right now. Power BI is really cool at sort of showing the data, mm-hmm. but it is pretty complicated setup on the back end if you have a whole bunch of stuff. But we're learning and moving to that. But some of our filtering we still like in SQL, so that's why we have some of that.
I see somebody, since somebody has a question that's so specific to this area, what is an example of some of the key reports that you use for your service?
Yeah, one key report is actually on mailbox quota used. So we've been tracking, that was one of the first metrics that we tracked, and it's because You get a 50 gigabyte mailbox in Exchange, and Exchange Online. So we're sort of tracking how that usage goes up. And what we saw, what we trend from all those reporting is we see a 30% increase each year. And we actually pulled that report. I forgot to mention in the feature reporting. So there is another feature called online archiving. And at Microsoft, I basically get all the features and stuff, right? So we didn't want to give someone with a 50 gigabyte also another remote mailbox with basically unlimited email, right? Because it makes it harder to move and things like that. So basically, we look at this report, anyone nearing 90% quota use, we would enable an online archiving and send an email to them on how they can use it and move it over so they don't get into those sort of issues. A lot of the other stuff, it's sort of like the mailbox growth. So we see how many mailboxes go up because we get treated just like you guys. We pay licenses and all that kind of stuff. We have a premier contract for support and we use all that kind of stuff. So we have to track my costs. So more mailboxes equates to more costs, and also more quota use equates to more costs and things like that. So those are sort of the key ones. And a lot of the newer ones that I'm enjoying is sort of monitoring the Exchange Online protection stats. So seeing when we get more spam email, and things like that, and typically we get them at like the end of each quarter essentially. I think they're trying to like get information from sales or finance or something, so it's sort of being ready for that and looking at how each month goes and how much mail flow goes, because then we always see like a sharp drop in like July because that's the summer, so that's when we're like, hey, let's take it easy this month, or that's when we know we can do a lot of changes because not a lot of people are using email, so there's some cool things to use. And we just got like a lot of our client stuff, or we're starting to learn how to use that. But like I mentioned earlier, it was interesting to see the different ways people were using email across the different regions. But hopefully I answered that. I think I went into different things. But you can ask another question later if I didn't answer it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, and then this is sort of the last slide is concluding. So when we got into this, we enabled a lot of that stuff. We had a really sharp decrease in services in this. When I had a full on-premises service worldwide, and even when we're in the hybrid and most of it was on premises, we had a lot of service incidents. Like we're probably averaging maybe one a week, and right now I'm averaging one a quarter, if that. And usually it's someone else. I won't name those teams, but it's usually someone else. And you know, a lot of decrease in escalations as we moved offices to Exchange Online. A lot of less weird server issues. Because stuff's getting fixed at the code level, right? When you move to Office 365, we have a sharp increase in user stats. So email 6 years ago. I don't know if you remember, Kim, like it used to be one of the worst services. Kept me up at night a lot. Moved Office 365. I mean, the NSAT just got better as we sort of not only moved to the newer service, but changed our mindset. But now we're basically the top dog in IT and probably for now, I guess.
That is a great
hopefully
service.
We want to stay that way. A lot better coordination across the different teams, like working with a networking team. They're a very key partner, and they're very good at their job. And making sure people can access our services. Big shout out to them, identity team, the sync team, and things like that. And then we have more increased agility to change where we're sort of focusing, how we're going with the service and where we want to improve, and you know, helping the product group understand different scenarios and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's basically. I think I'm done.
Is that it? I think we have a few questions.
Okay.
I do want to take this opportunity to thank you. We hope this session's been valuable to everyone. Several of you have submitted a couple of questions, and I'll jump to those in a moment. But before we do that, I want to just take a moment to ask you to answer the one final question in the big pulse window.
Okay.
And let us know what you think of this session. So let's go. Okay, let's see. Here's a great question following up on the tools for O365. Where are the tools for O365 mailbox migration that you mentioned, Sarah and the others?
Oh, so Sarah, I don't know the URL off the top of my head. It is a web service. It's with like the remote connectivity analyzer. I think if you just search for Office 365 Sarah on Bing, you should be able to find
nice.
The link in there. Migrations, So I know I talked about the mailer tool and stuff. So that was actually built in-house here in IT. It's just a lot of, you know, C# scripts and stuff like that, and SQL databases on the back end. But actually for migrations, there is, you're able to do it through the admin portal. But for Microsoft IT, we just use the remote PowerShell. And then we have a lot of the licensing scripts and that kind of stuff scripted out in PowerShell scripts that people run, and for automation, and then manually we have different ways for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a migration paper as well. I think we can post that in a link afterwards.
Yep.
And it's a long paper. It's like 30 pages and has way more detail on how to migrate and stuff like that.
Yes. So. For all of our technical IT pros in the audience, that migration paper, you can find it at microsoft.com/WAC IT Showcase and search for Exchange Migration. That's a great technical white paper you did. Here's another question. What was your biggest challenge when you first migrated to O365 as a service manager?
Yeah, so biggest challenge was like losing all that control when you're on premises, right? Like I can log on to the physical servers, and if something's wrong, you know, it's an internal IT joke, but you know, resetting IIS apples, and all that fixes a lot of stuff randomly, like that kind of stuff. But you lose all those optics. Like we can't just log into the servers and measure all that kind of stuff anymore. So that was a big challenge, that I can't control everything. And usually on premises, I mean, our network was very well connected for the WAN as well. And that's what's well connected for an on-premises service. And then when we're moving, you know, we have to shift that to the internet, and you know, you're going through a lot of stuff. So you lose a lot of control. There's a lot of stuff that is less forgiving now as you move to an internet service, because it's out, you know, it's out there. So everything the user runs into is much less forgiving than it was before. So that was a challenge, trying to focus on all that stuff and, you know, and just learning like, hey, take a little bit of time, take the big chunks, grab more data to understand what's really your priority. So that was it. Because, you know, when you do it, you want to do everything right at the same time. So that was a challenge, and that control and stuff.
Yeah.
Depends on the personality too. So.
Yep. There's one more here, and then I'll make the last call for any more questions. What's the one thing that you would stress for a service manager?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, but you know, a lot of the work the service manager does is on change management. I mean, that's like the ITO sort of methodology and stuff is based on, make sure quality and that kind of stuff. So I just want to stress that no matter how much you plan or do, you're always going to make someone angry. Users a lot of times don't like change, so you really have to do as much validation and get that documentation for support, because someone's going to always call support. So make sure they're sort of always equipped to do what they need to do to provide the best experience for the user. You know, they're basically your customer service.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to do as much as that, and you know, mitigate as much as possible. That's why we do sort of those phases and have those quality sort of metrics before we move on to each phase, and we make a decision whether we're going to move on or not, or we find like this is acceptable and we'll just document it and let the user know. And then, you know, user comms as well. You want to make sure the user's on top of it. And you know, a lot of times people aren't going to read the email, so you're going to have to try and either tailor it to them that they actually read it or stuff like that. But you just have to do as much as possible to mitigate sort of the change experience for the user. And that's what I just want to stress, is no matter what, you're not going to get, you know, 100%, but you might as well do as much as you can to get the bulk of them. Because we do actually, I mean, that's what we've been here internally at Microsoft, and we're seeing that in our NSAT. I mean, I'm not touching every 100% of the user personas or every individual user. I mean, someone's going to complain about email, but we just have to sort of prioritize those, look at the data, and just, you know, get it done. Yeah.
You run such a smooth service. I can't imagine that we get many complaints. Take this opportunity. We're at the end of our broadcast. I want to thank you for taking your time today. I know this is not, you've taken time out of your day job, and we really appreciate you sharing your information with us. IT Showcase has live webinars scheduled every month on a variety of different topics, especially for IT pros. We hope you'll join us again. Bring your colleagues. You can find more about our upcoming webinar schedule, as well as on-demand webinars and other content, such as technical case studies, at microsoft.com/WAC IT Showcase. And thank you for joining us. Have a great day.
Thanks.